Hi and welcome to the My Future Business Show. My name's Rick Nusky and today I'm sitting with Phil Singleton of Kansas City Web Design. How are you?
Good, how you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you, not too bad. Thank you for coming on the My Future Business Show today with us and sharing a little bit of your expertise. So what's happening in Phil's world?
Just kind of going through the grind. I've got a book that I wrote with a guy, John Jantz, who wrote Duct Tape Marketing last year, and that's kind of enabled me to basically scale my business out a little bit, which is essentially, I guess I would consider myself, my core business being a web designer.
Yep.
That's just because I think where you need to focus, and that's kind of the hub of where everything is these days.
Yeah.
My true interest really is, I think, in lead generation. And I'm especially passionate about search engine optimization, specifically getting Google, you know, so people can rank highly and get that visibility so they get a chance to get a click and then perhaps a phone call or a lead or a sale or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what that means is, in today's world, is you really have to be good at web design. You have to know what's going on your website to have a chance to rank on Google anymore. So by default, we had to kind of become web designers, even though I think my initial interest in getting into digital marketing was really more about Google.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, well, look, duct tape marketing, that's definitely well known.
Yeah, and how that worked is, it's funny because my background's, I consider myself an outsider. Okay, mm-hmm. I went to school and got a degree in finance.
Yep.
My first job out of school was with an insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really because they just so happened to be hiring entry-level people. So they started working for 3 years in this insurance job. And it was one of these things where it was like a beige, you know, building, beige carpet. I was in a cubicle, probably wearing beige pants. And I think by the third year, I started to feel a little bit like a zombie and my soul was getting crushed a little bit. And I started looking at the guys around me that had been there for a couple, you know, 2-3 decades. And I was like, wow, I just kind of felt my life getting pulled into a direction that it felt like I didn't really choose. And then you start making some money and getting some comfort. Again, I was out of school, so the money I was making was like, I'm so happy I have a job and be doing this kind of stuff. But then all of a sudden you kind of get to be pulled in directions where you didn't, it's not like I went to school, you know, dreaming to be about an insurance person. and not to knock that business or anybody, but it's just one of those things. So I actually said, hey, I have got to make a major change here because otherwise I'm going to, you know, start doing something that I didn't necessarily choose. I just knew right then that wasn't my passion. So I essentially packed up my bags and moved to Taipei, Taiwan, of all places.
Oh, wow.
Really, because I wanted to experience something different. I really wanted to learn a new language and get involved in international business. And I wanted to go to China, but this is going back like 20 years ago or so. So it was way, you know, not nearly as advanced. It, of course, come a long way in the last couple of decades.
Yeah.
You know, becoming a wealthy place with some nice big cities. Back then, it really wasn't like that. So Taiwan's a great place because they speak Mandarin Chinese and a lot of international commerce. And it was just a nice place to be able to go and study Chinese. That's what I ended up doing. I went and I studied Chinese. I went back to graduate school in the States. I got a job right out of grad school that actually took me back to Taiwan. I ended up kind of being in the venture capital, IPO, the .com era, so to speak, when I was working for a company out there that was bringing U.S. companies, North American companies to Asia to help them find strategic venture capital and strategic partnerships and that kind of stuff. So that was it ended up working out really well, right? I saw myself coming out of school and this wasn't it. Then I went to do something, you know, different.
Yep.
And it really pretty much put me on the path of where I am today. But it was great because I lived in Taiwan for 10 years. You know, I met my wife early on there.
Mm-hmm.
And what ended up happening, what got me into kind of web design SEO was the .com bubble, you know, burst, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then for a variety of different reasons, I ended up having a software company kind of just fall into my lap. And they were a company out of the States. The name of the company was DVDX Copy, and they sold this consumer software product.
Mm-hmm.
Did really well in the States. I think they had like $100 or $200 million in sales or something insane the last year of their business. But Hollywood studios ended up coming to shut them down because there were some issues with me, you know, copying DVD movies back then. But what ended up happening is they, you know, I was working with that company and helping them with Asia. And when they shut them down in the U.S., this software was still legally sold under fair use rights around the world. Mm-hmm. And I just so happened to be in Taiwan and we had an operation going there. So it was at that time when I was running this kind of spinoff operation in Taiwan, again, a software business. Yeah. We were selling retail around the world. But most of our sales were coming through these online affiliate relationships through like the precursors to blogs and, and people that are running like online communities and forums and this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And we were paying these guys affiliate commissions for folks that would come through the, you know, the banner ads, and the big guys we'd pay 50% of a sale. So we were just going back 15 years ago, we were paying guys, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a month that were probably working an hour a day, you know, managing these websites. And I was like, at that time, again, I was a finance guy, didn't know much about software, you know, happened to be, I guess, okay and run this business, being at the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. And I had an IT guy that was kind of the SEO guy, because we didn't call it SEO back then. And I had a graphics design guy, and they were trying to figure out what SEO was. Nobody really knew what it was, because I was just like, what's happening? Google was up there, and, you know, people are searching for it, they're finding it. How could we get our own website up there? So it was really kind of back then that I was trying to dig around and figure out what's happening. Mm-hmm. We ended up selling that business out and exiting it, and we moved back to the States. But it was really at that time, that software company that I worked for a short period of time, where I saw the power, you know, of Google, and that they were driving a lot of these purchase decisions. Even again, this is going back more than 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Moved back to the States, 2005, kind of just trying to find my way, figure out what we were going to do. It was a nice payday when we sold that company, but it wasn't like, you know, go buy yourself an island type of a thing. But what ended up happening is I did this one little dinky one page, you know, Microsoft front page website for an auto detailer that I happened to buy a cheesy little, you know, stick shift car, because I'd been living in Asia for a long time and didn't have a chance to, you know, drive around much. So I was like, oh, cool, I'm going to drive a 350Z for a little bit. But I met this auto detailer who was just kind of in this back, you know, shop, didn't have a website. I was like, dude, you have to get a website. And instead of getting $25 a car from the dealers that you're just trying to do to prep them for sale, you could be selling website, or you could be selling details, you know, full auto details for maybe $100 or $200. Got his website up. In no time, he was ranked. All of a sudden, you know, he's basically comes to me and says, hey, Phil, this has changed my business. It's changed my life. It was at that moment I knew what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I was like, I can make money off of this thing. And this guy's like looking at me like, wow, I really helped him, made a difference in his life. It was really one of the most rewarding things that I've ever had professionally. Of course, we've done it many times over, but that's really what kind of got me onto the hook.
Yep.
And got my passion, got me fired up about, okay, I'm really going to figure out what web design's all, really figure out what's driving Google. But it really, at the end of the day, came back to web design, and that's kind of where I've been focusing on the last 10 years.
It's really coming through, just the way you're talking about it. You know, the passion is absolutely there. Can I just spin back around to when you were living overseas? Did the travel component have an impact on your, I guess, your perspective of business? Was it different or difficult to do business elsewhere and to come into this space? Or did they have, you know, was the cultural impact of your travel a positive thing for your business?
Very much so, because I don't know. For some reason, when I got out of school, I developed some type of anxiety about just being in the professional world. So It got really bad. It got to the point where I felt like I couldn't get in meetings without like breaking in a sweat.
Oh.
And I couldn't even like almost talk to people. So it got really bad. And I felt like I could understand stuff. But for some reason, anxiety was probably maybe lower self-esteem or lack of confidence in being in the business world or something like that. Mm-hmm. But what ended up happening is when I made this change, I figured out my life's not in the right place and that's what I want to do. When I went and packed up my bags and went into a new country, a new culture, and then found a way to, I guess, survive or adapt.
Yeah.
For some reason, it was through that travel and doing stuff completely on my own without a safety net, I really all of a sudden felt like I gained a ton of confidence.
Yep.
And I stopped worrying, I guess, so much about what people thought about me for some reason, really because I was in a new culture and I was like, geez, it kind of set me free because you break these like cultural shackles that are on you because you're so worried about what the other folks are thinking about, at least how I was at some point, judging myself against like maybe other people. Mm-hmm. Perhaps that was a source of anxiety, I'm not sure. But when I went into this other culture, which to me was like full-on culture shock, people don't really understand you culturally. You have to adapt and understand the history of people, understand their language, I think, a little bit. Because otherwise, it doesn't. You're there, and they don't. There's just this disconnect. So for some reason, some way, in working in there, again, kind of jumping into a new part of my life without a safety net, and kind of making a life for myself somewhere that was totally foreign, really built my confidence up all the way around. I think that part of the traveling. And I guess it's more of a personal thing than saying, hey, I did this and I learned this because, you know, a different way. The other thing I think that really helped out is I think I developed what I would consider almost kind of like an Asian work ethic,
okay.
Which is guys, I mean, they're just working all the time and you're doing stuff and doing deals more like they're in the nighttime. And it just seems like it's always going and bustling.
Yeah.
Where we're in the States anyway, a lot of things just seem to kind of shut down at 5 or 6 a lot. And there's just this mentality, I think, and that's changed a lot. I think with the gig economy and people trying to do other things and start other businesses, it kind of feels like it's getting more how I felt it was, you know, living in Taiwan and doing business in other parts of Asia. But I think that really, really helped me out too, because I'm basically almost kind of still living that lifestyle where I'm happy what I'm doing. I'm like working kind of like, you know, right now in a way, this late at night, but it gets me pumped. It gets my blood flowing.
Yeah.
You know, my passion. I like talking about it. So you get up and start doing this stuff. So that part I think really did help me in a way, grow as a person that I may never have gotten if I would have stuck along in a comfortable cubicle job. Like a lot of my friends, you know, had done at college. So,
yeah. So this reinvention of yourself and this need to, I guess, work hard and do the hours when necessary, but it seems to me that you value living life and looking after yourself and self-reflection. Would you agree with that?
I totally agree. But I also think it's just different when you're working and you're not passionate about what you're doing. I mean, the days get so long and you're the clock and you're miserable and you're just like, oh gosh, whereas if you're doing something like I'm happy to get up at like 5 in the morning and every day is kind of course there's certain things of the business that are always going to be a grind and maybe I'm less excited about.
Yeah.
But in general, every day in some ways almost kind of feels like Christmas. I mean, that's the way that I always kind of, you know,
it's a sweet spot,
just that
isn't it?
Kind of, It is. And I never, looking back at myself, I was like, geez, there's just been times when I was like, holy cow, this is miserable for me. And it could be anything, right? It's just once you figure that what that thing is and it makes you passionate, you're passionate about it. It really makes long days not seem like long days because you're kind of doing what you like.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of where I found myself.
Phil, the focus of My Future Business is to help business owners create business systems and change their way of thinking about business. I'm looking at your bio and looking at your websites prior to the call, and there's a lot we could talk about. Could we just touch on systems within your own business and how you manage your business overall? Do you have systems?
I think I do have systems in place, and what I found is that I'm very systematic about the parts that I'm passionate about.
Right, yeah.
And I'm a little less systematic about the ones that I'm not. And it's really interesting because it's in the last few weeks that I've really tried to look into my own business to kind of figure out, okay, I know, you know, I think no matter where you get in a business, you have some success. You know, you get to a point to be like, can I do better? Can I scale it? Do I want to scale it? Because I feel like myself, I've got a small team of 6 people, but I still, in a lot of ways, feel like I run it like a solopreneur.
Yeah.
But I do have, you know, the parts again that I'm passionate about, getting like the website set up the way I think is the right way to get them to populate them and integrate them in a way that Google will like, and to really work on the things that help people on the lead generation. I mean, that's really where I think my passion is. But I look back and I say, geez, you know, I really don't have the way I go through the sales process is a little cowboy. And I think probably on the back end, I could probably use some improvement in those kind of areas. But I think I'm very, like I said, I guess I don't know if that's kind of a non-answer, but
No,
I felt
absolutely.
I've become very systematic in the things that I really want to establish myself as an expert in. And the other parts that are less interesting, I've been less systematic about. And I personally have to change that in order, I think, to break through some, to grow. And I've really just come to that realization this year. But yeah, systems.
I look at the range of products and services that you're providing, and it's very impressive. You know, we're looking at web design, and I guess that's the look and feel of the website. Is that right?
Well, our process really is to try and set the website up in a way that Google's going to like, and really managing the balance between, okay, it's got to be look professional. And to us, again, and people don't like to hear this, I think, in the space that we're in terms of pure web design, pure graphic design. But, you know, our pitch to clients usually is, hey, web design, the graphic parts of this stuff in the business is actually a commodity, right? Because that you could, there is no real specific set of pixels that you need to get in an arrangement to maximize, you know, the ROI of the project. There's 1,000 different ways you can design a website that'll still look good. As long as you got the right content and the right pieces integrated, they could be equally successful. But you get a lot of people, especially business owners, they focus on that front end because that's the part that they understand, right? And the one that they get kind of emotionally tied to. But when we talk about Google and lead generation and conversion optimization, I mean, there's some specific things you have to lay out on the website to have a chance to get that. And a lot of times you need to manage the balance between what you want to see as from an artistic level and maybe a corporate identity level versus what you need to show Google to prove that you are the best, you know, search result or the best page for that query or what have you. So, there are a lot of things I think that go into web design. And for us, I think the biggest thing is what ends up happening. We've got a chapter in the book actually that's called, I think it's the most popular one that we have, at least in terms of questions. It's chapter 5, and it's titled, Why Do 99% of New Websites Fail? And the reason is because most people treat them as digital brochures, right? They think of them as artwork, or they think they got a captive audience. I'm going to build the website and say things the way I want to say them. And then they work with a web design firm that traditionally are going to be more front end focused, and they're more focused on maybe the artwork and the functionality, not so much on the lead generation or the ROI or the other things that really kind of, I think, make a difference in terms of helping businesses grow. But that's just the way the business is. I mean, here in the States on TV, we've got companies like GoDaddy and Wix and Weebly that are, you know, brainwashing business owners into thinking they can spend $25, $50 a month for a nice looking website, and they're going to rank them on Google, and that's really all that they need. So it kind of makes people think of them, I think, more as an expense and not as an investment or something that needs to be tied in. But really, I think what websites have evolved into as they're really like marketing platforms, right? I mean, they're places where you should be putting all your best content. It should be the referral source for everything that you're doing, and there should be some more thought put into the way that they're architected and engineered so that you draw people in and you can pixel and tag them and track them and set up some things of conversion so that they can sell for you while you're not online, all these types of things. But more importantly, I think the biggest part of the way we design websites is you want to treat them and that exercise as more of a full-on holistic, you know, marketing endeavor, meaning one of the biggest things that we do, we focus on, is really trying to understand the keyword research and the way ideal customers are searching for the products and services that a business is trying to sell. This is really key, because if you can get into the mind of your ideal customers and figure out how they search for things, you can then start to figure out how you can structure your website, and even down to like how many pages and what kind of pages that you need to build it from the ground up. Versus what ends up happening is, again, a lot of business owners will go shop for web design. They'll put together a website and put it out there. And if they do anything, they'll quote unquote try and do SEO on it later. Well, that's doing it after the fact. The perfect time to start working on your website is after you've, you know, thought about your marketing strategy, thought about your keyword research, and started to bake that in to your website plans from the beginning. And not as an afterthought. And that's what our whole process is. And that's really the reasons how we get a lot of results, is because there's a big competitive advantage to thinking about these things ahead of time and implementing into the design and the development of the website and the content marketing plan versus doing them as an afterthought.
It seems to me that it's important for your business to get in early then, so that you can save them a lot of time, heartache, and hassle to rework these things? I suspect you see a lot of that.
Big time. I mean, that's kind of what one of the big motivations for the book is, that we, every single week here in Kansas City, we get calls from folks that that have just done their websites, and we have to tell them, well, in some cases we've got to redesign it from scratch, and others it's just more expensive to go through the process of building it because they aren't getting the results, right? And that's because that's what ends up happening, is I think business owners are starting to understand that, or they're starting to kind of, I think in general, they're starting to put some accountability on the website. So what ends up happening is they build the websites, and there's some expectation that you build and launch a new website that it's going to help your business. And again, this is kind of getting back a little bit into business owners, but one of the things that we see, because we try and rank for our own services here in Kansas City, one of the things that I can see is most people aren't searching for what they really need, which is kind of a holistic marketing plan, right? And a strategy, and then building tactics in that fill a whole strategy. What they do is they search for tactical pain points, right?
Mm-hmm.
They say, oh, our phone's not ringing anymore, so let me try this SEO, or let me try this PPC, or maybe we can get a social media person. Or the biggest one of all is usually web design. That's where most of our leads come in, even for digital ongoing digital marketing work, is people start and they figure, you know what? Our business is flat this year. We need a new website. Well, what they really need is a marketing plan that's got a digital focus and is all tied together, right? But they start with a website because they just think of, okay, we're not, you know, let's just start there because we know we need help. So
yeah.
I think that's really kind of where the biggest point is on that. But yeah.
One of the things that is of interest to me is the, you know, your traditional, let's call them traditional bricks and mortar style businesses who want to make that transition into the digital space. Do you have a large presence helping that type of business come online?
We do more and more, because I think what's ended up happening the last 12 to 24 months is you can just see the older generation, I guess, of business owners that have invested in like some of the traditional outbound things, and they just know, or they can see that it's not working like it used to, right?
Yeah.
So they know, I mean, the phone books are gone, but they still try and do print. Maybe they'll try and do TV or radio or some other form of outbound, and they just see that it's just not working the way it used to. So they almost kind of get forced into some kind of digital marketing. Now, of course, what ends up happening there a lot is there's a lot of snake oil and think people making promises, and you know, especially when it comes into SEO.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these guys will dip their, a lot of these guys that are trying to like dip their toe or figure it out, they're getting hit from two sides, right? They're like, they know the old forms of marketing aren't working like they used to. And they know some of the things that they've tried, because maybe they tried to dip their feet in it or haven't like researched it well enough or you know, done their due diligence and end up getting kind of burned on it. But we see this quite a bit. But I tell people all the time, the problem is I still think, and I look at marketing in two ways right now. I think of it in terms of kind of the older outbound marketing, which to me is a little bit more about demand creation, right? Somebody's always got to be out there and creating the demand,
yeah,
and getting people thinking about it and creating sales that aren't there because getting people thinking about stuff. But really what ends up happening is nobody goes from the TV or the radio directly to the phone call for a sale or the email, right? They see it on TV and they think about it, and then they run to the internet and do their research and figure out who's coming up first on Google or who's got the good reviews, or there's this little piece of the internet piece that gets in there. So I think what ends up happening, at least here that I see, like even specifically in Kansas City, is we'll see people do a big advertising push, and yeah, it's great because they'll create the demand, but they don't catch their own demand when it filters back on the internet. And what I mean by that is they've got a terrible website or no website. They've neglected their online reviews. So ABC company does a great TV ad, and they you go online, you see they've got like 2 1-star reviews and the rest of them are terrible, right? So, and they're just not in a position to catch the demand that they just spent money on. So what they end up doing is they drive it into that demand into their competitors who have great looking websites and a lot of online testimonials and reviews. And when they say, well, it's not working, well, I think it's working, but you got to have both sides of the coin in order to be able to have a full, you know, marketing piece. Otherwise you're just helping out your competitors. Yeah. And when we frame it like that, they kind of get what we're talking about, because I think a lot of people, for some reason, when when you talk to them as a business owner or a business person, as a business owner, sometimes they don't think of it that way. But if you explain it to them, like, how do they, I mean, what do you do when you go to Amazon or when you want to look to a new restaurant or go to a new hotel? Do you ever do online searches or check the reviews and that kind of stuff? Sure, we do that. That's all we do. We Google, you know, Google's like the one common denominator. Not everybody might be on Facebook or does all this stuff, but pretty much everybody uses Google for something in most places, you know, around the world. So that I think that really ends up being kind of a wake-up call for folks.
Yeah, definitely.
But we're really seeing it. And the other point that really drives it home is I'm seeing a lot of people like snark at the millennial business owners, but I don't look at it that way. I see some of these young, ambitious people, the guys and girls that are coming up creating their own businesses. Mm-hmm. They don't know anything but the internet. So they're like genetically engineered to be awesome digital marketers. You start talking to them about TV and a traditional outbound cold calling, they're just like, that's not how we buy. We want a website. We want social media. You know what I mean? They're just like They're already locked in. Like, that's just the way they were like raised. So these guys coming in, we've got young people in their late 20s that are stealing large chunks of market share around from their the guys that are in their 50s and 60s and still dipping their toes in digital. And for some of them, it's almost becoming, you know, a little bit too late. So
yeah, well, there's a big takeaway in this call is to for our listeners who are thinking about making the transition in any way, shape or form to the digital landscape, there it is, straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak, that, you know, where are you if you're not online, Phil?
It's just any of this anymore, isn't it? Don't we all kind of look at that thing as the, it's like I was on another call the other day, and I just for myself, I went to go look at the companies with the largest market caps in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I pulled up the Dow, and there's a website called the Dogs of the Dow, I think it is, or something like that. Or it's just one that happens to pull up on a daily basis. It goes and shows you what the top, you know, most valuable companies in the world are, at least in the state. And the top five that were up there, number one is Apple. Number two was Google. I think number three is Amazon. Number four was Microsoft. And number five was Facebook.
Wow, the giants.
Tell me, and the giants, but I mean, all those to me represent the devices that we look for stuff on. It's the computers, you know, it's the cell phones and all those things, and it's the way we consume the digital content. Every single one of those has to do with, to me, you know, websites and devices in this digital space, right?
Yeah,
and I think
yeah.
that was really telling. It's like, if you want to figure out where you should be focusing, especially, you know, your marketing, your business, look at the five companies that are basically at the very top of the market capital value. They all have to do with, you know, with this digital piece of it. So,
it's
so yeah.
I heard that recently, that if you really want to know where to, for e-commerce business, this was particularly focused at. If you really want to know where to focus your efforts, look at Amazon. Because they'll be setting the scene, won't they? You know, then that's a classic example. So I going back a little bit, you're talking about how essentially, you know, the older generation of business owners are not closing the loop. They're putting all of this investment, time, money, and, you know, energy into setting up, but they won't close that loop. Is that what you're talking about when you talk about in the book the biggest mistake that small business owners are making when it comes to the web, or is that just part of it?
I think the biggest mistake is really going to be, I look at everything as being, you know, web centric, and really the website being the referral source. So for me, I think the biggest mistake that I see is I think business owners don't really incorporate that web presence or think about their website as a way of something that they should be putting thought in or having at the top of mind on a daily basis.
Yeah,
they still kind of think of it as a side thing, or like they had this digital brochure project. But really, you brought up Amazon, and the biggest thing that I think that people should be focusing on in terms of bang for the buck is really trying to use their website as a way to prove that they're the best choice for whoever's searching for them. And the way you do that is by showing your track record and using your website to establish authority and trust. So we focus a lot less these days on trying to put up a bunch of just jargon or saying, here's what I do, here's a list of my product and service and the features. Mm-hmm. We put a lot more emphasis on, here's the people that I've worked for, here's the things I've done to certify or show that I'm an expert, here's the content that I've created, here's a laundry list of people that say I'm the best at what I do. Because me saying I'm the best is one thing, but 10 other people saying that I'm the best they've ever worked with is a lot different, right? So I mean, those are the things that make a big difference. And I think to me that really comes back to Amazon, of all of them becoming the Amazon effect, because everybody pretty much goes to Amazon, and we all, before we make a purchase, most of us, unless we've already vetted that product or service and know we want it, we're looking at the reviews, right? So and that's the one thing I think that, and it's no different than anything else. It's like, you want a product or service here, local Kansas City, most people are going to look it up online, see what the reviews are and that kind of stuff. And I think reviews, they're still, I think they're the most important and probably the biggest element that you need to have to convert sales. But they're social, also, social in proof. My opinion, go ahead.
Social proof.
The social proof, and the thing I try and explain to my clients is, they're super important. We all know that we use them for everything, purchases. But if you think about them, they're really rare.
Yeah.
If you look at an Amazon listing for somebody that's got 500 reviews, well, you think, wow, that's a lot of reviews, but that product probably has tens of thousands of sales.
Yeah.
They only got a small fractional percentage. So what that means is, we know they're super important. We know they have a huge impact on being able to close a sale, but we also know that they're very hard to get. So what does that mean? It means that we really have to work in a very solid – this is where it gets into systems. You were talking about systems?
Yeah.
I think we've developed some really solid systems into helping people get those reviews in the right places online, because – more than anything, of course, I'm talking more about maybe local or regional businesses. When we get a business that's got zero reviews and we get them Google rankings and we pair that up with 50 or 100 reviews, that makes the phone ring more than anything else. Mm. The Google reviews are great, but what ends up happening is people want that social proof more. So you got to find a way to get them in the right places that make the big difference. So having a system, and like I said, they're hard to get. So you don't just go out and ask somebody for a review anymore. You usually have to go back to them two or three times. You got to have a system. It's got to be easy. You have to be persistent. You have to be tenacious.
Yeah.
Because it takes many, many goes usually to even get one. Because even if you ask somebody that's happy, a lot of times they'll say yes and we don't hear back from them, right? So everybody's got kind of a story like that. But once you get them up there and you get them up in the right places, that really has a huge, huge impact on just about every business. So that's I think really important.
Yeah, well, I'm hearing some, some classic Dan Kennedy style references to social proof and a bit of Jay Abraham's referral systems, and in all of that is having a systematic way to make sure as part of your packages feel that this is what you just do, and not to consider your website to be some sort of an adjunct or an add-on to your offline business. It needs to be an integral part of your overall business. Phil, the SEO for growth that you wrote with John, I can't say his name, how do you say
it? Jantz.
Jantz. So that's been featured on the likes of, Mashable, Oracle, Entrepreneur, Inc., Huffington Post, and so on. Where can people find the book?
Well, it's up on Amazon, but we also have a kind of a standalone book site at SEOforGrowth.com. And one of the special things that we've done there is we've got a book page where we've got a nice free ebook bundle that has one, quite a detailed one from the guys at Yoast on website optimization.
Oh, yep, yep.
I think it's a 100-plus page ebook that they gave us to bundle with the book. And then we've got another one from Larry Kim of WordStream. And then we've got another one that I co-wrote with another marketing consultant called Local SEO. We bundled those together in a nice little zip. So if you buy the book or if you're a Prime member, you get it for free. You can still come back with the code to the website, fill out a little form, and you get that that three ebook bundle for free right up there. So that's been pretty popular. As long as I'm waiting for those guys to tell us we can't do it anymore, but they haven't said, nobody said we can't yet. So
I'm looking at your free one-click SEO analysis. Tell us a bit about how that works for people who would visit your website.
So, I mean, obviously for a company like mine that's in the business, that's a great, being able to have, you know, a website that ranks or has got an inbound channel, having that call to action there that I think is really compelling for people is really important for anybody. So that, just having that, I guess, in looking at that, is how could I have something like this for my business? Not necessarily a website grader, but whatever it is. I mean, this is really important these days to, you know, if you spend all this time and money to get somebody to a website, you really have to have something compelling to, you know, get that click or get them on your subscription list or some way to be able to you know, continue that conversation. But for us, we've actually given them a, people that come onto it, it's a nice way to kind of dip your toes and say, geez, I really haven't thought about my website. I'm going to enter this in here, you know, fill out a couple of my competitors. And it really kind of, if you haven't read the book, it helps a little bit to kind of pull the curtains behind the matrix and see like, wow, okay, I haven't really thought about these things. And there's some really some basic SEO things that most people don't even implement on their websites. A lot, sometimes folks will have, if they've got, had a website up for a while, if you just take advantage of just a few of the fundamentals on SEO, you can actually get lucky and uncork some of that SEO value because you, you know, unknowingly had kind of shut Google off on it for whatever reason or hadn't opened it up. So it's a nice little tool. It's by no means a, you know, would replace a comprehensive audit, but it does give some actionable things on where to start. It kind of gives you at least a benchmark, like how am I doing? I haven't really thought about, you know, my website other than maybe just kind of being a digital brochure or something to publish some stuff up on. So that's a nice little tool to have up there as well.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely fantastic. I mean, anybody who's just dipping their toes into SEO and internet marketing and considering all of these things, there's lots of moving parts, isn't there, Phil?
It really is. But what I love about SEO these days is, you know, I was in it, deep in it for 10 years, and it used to almost exclusively be about tinkering with the, your website under the hood and the content that's on it, and doing a lot of off-page backlink building, which is just trying to get third-party websites to link back to yours. Yeah. That game so hard for so long that Google dropped the hammer on it about 5 years ago. And what they ended up doing, which is what I love, because they've really kind of changed behavior in the way the SEO world has approached SEO, is they've really found ways to go out and grade companies on how well they're doing in a variety of different places. So now Google is able to go out and say, okay, let's measure their social media participation and their signals. Let's see what their reputation management's all about. Are they blogging? Is the content growing naturally with good, you know, good content and being shared? So you almost got this kind of like holistic piece where they're able to go out, and the more you're able to kind of plug your website and integrate that all in a way that Google can see that you're doing this and get full credit for it, it's just a more exciting way to do business. And it really starts to me to make Google rankings become much more than just about the rank. And to me, I think they've become a fundamental marketing KPI. So seeing rank and organic rank on your content to me is more of an indication that you're doing all these other things right. And I think that's really kind of what the important part about SEO is these days, is Google's really done a great job of going out and saying, hey, we're not, it doesn't just, you know, I talked to this other guy the other day and they were thinking like, well, you know, we just kind of thought that Google rankings happened like the weather, right? And it's not like that.
No.
You can, if you do things the right way and set it up and make it easy for them to crawl and organize your website and do all these other things in a way that plugs them together. Because you see a lot of people that will go out and they'll be like, well, Phil, I've got a website and I spent time on it, and I go post on social media. Well, what they end up doing sometimes is they'll post like their best content up on Facebook and it dies there. Where they should be posting that up as a blog post and extending that link out to social media and making people come back. So simple things like this. When I say integrating social media and reputation management, all this kind of stuff together, relatively simple things like this, where you make your website kind of the referral source and the hub for all these digital marketing things that you're doing, can have a huge impact and make a, you know, a 1 or 2x return, maybe turn into a 5x or a 10x return. And that's really what, to me, you know, SEO is all about. That, in the book, people have read it. Some people have been like, well, this isn't an SEO book, it's a web marketing book. But that's really the point, is it's become more about, you know, integrated digital marketing and just doing it in a way that you got an SEO mindset instead of just hip shooting these things all in different directions and not tying them all together.
Yeah, and the big takeaway there, Phil, is that we need to look at this as a comprehensive network of activities that you would undertake as a small to medium business, or even large businesses for that matter, to make sure that your touch points throughout the web are comprehensive and being measured. Now, when I think about Google, I just think of this juggernaut. I can get all my statistics from, you know, different places, like their analytics, and, you know, you can run AdSense and AdWords, and, you know, you've got their URL shorteners and all these things that they do. What do you think they're up to at the moment? Where do you think they're going to go with their algorithms? What's next? Do you know, if you hark back to the Panda days, what are they up to at the moment?
Great question. And this is one of the things I think I'm most hot on right now, because it's really kind of changed the way we've our approach to web design. That is, no, and this is what I tell people, and we talk to here in the States too, which is like, no matter what you think of has gone on politically, either in the States or in other places,
yeah,
what's happened to the internet is that it was already not a high trustworthy place for a lot of consumers.
No.
And all of a sudden it became even less trustworthy, right? So you got a bunch of fake news and things being fake, or you've got people being, you know, hacked. There's a lot of hacking things, and the internet just became a lot less trustworthy than it already was.
Mm-hmm.
So that I kind of saw coming right away, because I was like, okay, this is really going to make it, you know, people even more skeptical,
yeah,
you know, websites. Then what ended up happening in February is Google has this really interesting document that I think everybody in digital marketing, I think, should read. It's called their quality ratings guidelines.
Yeah.
And I think now it's a 157 page document. But really what Google does is they hire an army of 10,000 people. I'm pretty sure I don't know where they're located. I think they're all remote, but there's 10,000 plus people that they hire for somewhere between $15 and $25 an hour to go out and manually check the results to see what the quality is like. So they don't just go out there. They actually have an army of people that are constantly manually grading the search results from a quality standpoint from actual humans, and not just letting the algorithm go wild, right?
Wow.
And really important piece there, right? Because it's like they're actually saying, okay, we're having this human test and we're paying people for it. So that document has always been fascinating to me, because it's like, gosh, if they're going to tell you anything about that, it's between the lines in this thing, right? Because they're using that as a way to grade themselves. So they've got these details on how to do it. So one of the things that they came through in this new revision of the document that they've revised many times is they actually started to talk about fake news,
yeah,
and trust,
yeah,
and education and authority and all these things where I'm just like, holy cow. And they give you specific examples of the types of websites that are high trust and low trust. And if you start reading through this, all of a sudden you're just like, okay, geez, I know what I have to do on a website now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I have to look at myself as a quality rater, and what can I put on my website that's going to establish me as an expert in 20 or 30 seconds as I roll down the screen? Well, geez, a video of you talking, or you having, you know, BBB or some kind of certifications or listing, and all that, you've got actual testimonials or all these things that make you look like a real business versus, you know, some of these guys that'll just put up, you know, text about their services and there's no faces and this kind of stuff. Really great and really, I think, interesting information. I think something that to me changed the way we kind of focused on how I really even look at websites. I already kind of did some of this before, but now I look at websites even differently this year, and that I almost kind of think of them as a live court case where the jury's the client, and you're basically trying to prove to them and put the evidence out.
Yeah, it's a bit like that, isn't it?
Yeah, to make the case. Because at the end of the day, if you're, you know, our attention spans are like 8 or 10 seconds or whatever I read here recently, mm-hmm, you got to put it out there really quickly. And the people that are looking for stuff these days, they just want the guy or the girl or the product or the service. They want somebody to make it so easy for them that it's the no-brainer choice. And you can do that with a website. You can do that by stacking the deck in the right way, you know what I mean, and putting the right information out, and yeah, not worrying so much about, well, we got to tell everybody about all the things that we do. No. You can actually do that a little bit later, or maybe just summarize it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What you need to do is get the social proof in the right place so that people trust you immediately. And they're just like, geez, all these other people said you were the one, and they gave all these reasons, and they're vouching for you in these places in these different ways, you know, by way of showing your portfolio and all these kind of things. That's what really, I think, makes a big difference. One, for closing people, but we can see that Google's actually looking for this kind of stuff to rank you. So that to me is kind of one of the bigger takeaways of this year, and really how we're kind of focusing on these things, and also why I think I tend to like beat the dead horse on reviews and testimonials.
Yeah, I understand why. It's about that authenticity, isn't it? That you're talking about this quality score, and you know, thank you for revealing that insight for the audience. I'm sure that's a massive takeaway, is to understand that, you know, if you're going to put content out there, don't make sure you don't put out rubbish is essentially what we're talking about.
Exactly.
So
and
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean that's exactly it. And don't be afraid to put yourself out there a little bit, you know, talk, you know, show who you are. Use, I mean, all the things that are out there, you know, put your physical, if you got an office, I mean, put the physical address out. Don't be putting content out to just put content out, but you know, it's much more, I think, important to put quality stuff out there that actually adds value versus just trying to, you know, hit numbers and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, these are the things I think that are really, moving the needle. And also really just finding a way to record. I mean, I think a lot of times people have lots of great information and many, many happy customers, but you would never know by looking at their website. You know what I mean? So just finding, again, maybe a system in place to make sure that you're harvesting all this good stuff that's coming, you know, maybe your business on a weekly basis and documenting in a way that, you know, people can see that so that they can, you know, choose you basically, I think is really important.
And differentiate yourself. Look, you talked about quality. This has been a quality call. I've had a really great time speaking with you, Phil. In fact, I'd love to invite you back because I don't really think we've taken too much of a deep dive into internet marketing, which I know is a passion of yours. I know that you know, lead generation is a big thing for you, and it's a skill set that I know you want to talk about. How about we catch up again soon?
Would love to.
Excellent, Phil. Thank you again. And for everyone who is looking for your services, tell them where they can find you.
Well, SEOforGrowth.com is kind of where we wrote the book, and you know, John and I kind of, you know, packed together everything that we knew in that piece. So that's a great place. But if you wanted to see how kind of I run my business, again, we service most people in Kansas City or the Midwest region of the States. But I've got my SEO services website is at kcseopro.com. And I got a little website called kcwebdesigner.com, which is kind of where it all started. We're actually relaunching that one pretty soon. But again, you know, locally focused stuff. But it gives you kind of a taste of, you know, the things that we're doing. And you'll see, if anybody sees the site the way it is right now and how we're relaunching it, you'll see a lot of what we talked about in terms of, you know, trying to put that social proof up, making that kind of a bigger part of what's up there is gonna change for us here pretty soon. So I'm most active on LinkedIn, so that just happens to be my favorite place of choice. So anybody's always welcome to contact me up through LinkedIn as well.
Okay, Phil. Well, look, what I'll do is I'll put together a write up and some links to those particular URLs.
Thanks, Rick.
Not a worry. So I will catch up with you again soon, and thanks everybody for listening.
I had a blast. Thank you.